ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் சைவம் டாட் ஆர்க், தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். தி டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் பிளேஃபுல்னஸ் இன் சில்ட்ரன், ஃபீட்பேக் ஆன் வேர்ட்ஸ் தட் ஹர்ட், டு ஐ நவ் ஹாவ் டூ குரூஸ், அண்ட் தென் டீலிங் வித் டிஸ்கரேஜ்மெண்ட், அண்ட் ஃபைனலி Communicating, presented by Sri Shivaya Bodhinatha Velayatha Swami. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Got some early feedback already from our talk last phase on words that hurt and on teasing and joking. And every response so far says, well, you know, teasing and joking, I put it up to the fourfold test. Is it true, kind, helpful, and necessary? And it didn't pass. No one has said, well, my teasing and joking passed the test. No one has said that yet. Every response conforms to the idea that teasing and joking, gee, doesn't pass this test. But I tease and joke for a good reason. You know, I'm trying to make people laugh, trying to lighten the mood. Things always get heavy. Not enough laughter in the world, and so forth. So the motive is good, right? But the method is flawed. So to catalyze our thinking about it, not as a final list, but just to kind of catalyze something in motion, getting it into motion, what are some alternatives to teasing and joking? In other words, we're trying to make things lighter, we're trying to make people laugh, because things are too serious, somber, not fun enough, not jovial enough. What can we do? Hire a professional. Watch a movie or TV show that is a comedy. Hire a professional. Yeah. Watch a movie or TV show that is a comedy. Steve Martin comedy, Eddie Murphy comedy. There's some wonderful comedies. And nobody will get hurt, right? Nobody gets hurt in watching a TV show or a movie that's a comedy. Number two, read a humorous book. Yes, books still exist. There are some funny books that you can share with each other, read, and have a great time. Playing non-competitive sports, that can be fun and lift the mood. Taking a walk in nature, enjoying a beautiful sunrise or sunset. Beautiful time of year here. We get both the sunrise and the sunset are quite beautiful, worth getting out there and walking around and enjoying together. Lightens the mood. Do a different activity you both enjoy, such as planting new plants in the garden. That's always fun if you have somewhat of a green thumb. Discuss a different subject you both enjoy, such as certain kinds of cooking. Talk about something different, a light subject. So those are just some thoughts to catalyze your own thinking about, gee, what can I do instead of teasing and joking around? How can I lighten the mood, lessen the seriousness, make people laugh, make us all feel more filled with fun and happiness? So there's plenty of things to do, and those are just a few suggestions, and I'm sure you can think of a lot more on your own. Share a story to open up the next subject. Many years ago, we had some young men on task force, very young boys, not men, boys, and probably 12 years old or so, maybe a little younger. And one day, while they were here, I went into the office, and one of them was hiding under the desk from another one. So it made me laugh so much because here, this is to me a very serious object. This is a desk, where someone sits down and they work very efficiently and so forth, and there's very important papers on it. No, to this child, it was something to hide under. Hide and seek. So it reminded me of the playfulness of being young, and also that even if we're not young, the element of playfulness and fun is part of human nature, part of human nature we don't want to ignore, particularly as we get older. We don't want to forget about it, take things too seriously. So it also needs to be part of the nature of our activities, members' activities. So I was looking up in Saivadharma Shastras, see what it said. Found a list. Gurudeva loves to make lists. Here's a list of activities. Suggested activities for missions. So, first activity, of course, as you would imagine, is the weekly satsang in a mission house or at a monastery. Second activity, doing karma yoga to help maintain monasteries and temples. So everyone does those pretty well. Those are under control. But the third activity, providing for social events and activities, such as picnics, field trips, youth retreats, group outings, sewing circles, hiking, skating, family nights, breakfast gatherings, and non-competitive sports and games. For youth and adult members. So it's number three. Right after the two that we do very well, there's number three. So how many picnics have we all had last year? How many hikes? Probably not enough. So I was reminded of this by the success of the activity in Malaysia. I'm sure you all read it on satellite news. They had a family gathering for a few days in Port Dickson in Malaysia, and everyone really enjoyed it, particularly the youth. Found it very inspiring to have fun with one another and see their parents have fun together in a nice big social gathering. Very relaxing, and it definitely released tension and created a spirit of greater inspiration, particularly among the younger members and the children. So it's a good example of the need for fun and need for social activities of that kind. So having that in mind, we put it in the parenting guidelines we're developing. We have 9 guidelines for the first gurus, qualities they want to cultivate in their children. One of them is playful self-contentment. Playful. Playful self-contentment is when a child's usual mood is fun-loving, happy, and satisfied. How is this developed? It is through the parents living and verbalizing the philosophy that life is meant to be lived joyously. So that was certainly one of Gurudeva's messages, both verbal and just through his demeanor, the way he looked. You know, you saw him and saw him smiling, and you felt that he was joyous, and you felt a little more joyous, and that was, life is meant to be lived joyously. He really reflected that quality beautifully. It is by holding the perspective that happiness does not depend on external circumstances, but is a consciousness we can claim, whether life is free of or filled with challenges. So that, of course, is our Chum perspective. Happiness is always there, right? Doesn't go away. We just have to move awareness into that state of mind. We just have to have the discipline, the self-control, to not look outside and get upset about something and feel unhappy, to look outside, see something, and remain happy. Why should life control our happiness? Why shouldn't we control our happiness? It's just a state of mind, state of consciousness that we can claim. So that philosophy, passing that on to the children, is the idea. It is by teaching the children to be satisfied with what they have in the present rather than what they desire to have in the future. So planning for the future and acquiring things in the future, thinking about the future, is good. But we don't want to get in a state of mind that until we have this, this, and this, we're not content. Until we have a bigger home, until we're retired, until we have a new job, until we have more money, we're not really content. We can be content right now with what we have. It is nurtured by the family spending times together, filled with play, fun, and laughter. Well, that's important. The ability to remain fun-loving, joyful, and content enables one to face with far greater equanimity the ups and downs of life. So that's the benefit of the quality, is that if we can hold this state of mind as different experiences come to us in life, some of which are always difficult, we're not as disturbed by them. We can hold on to this fun-loving, playful, joyful, satisfied perspective. So that's the goal of that one. It's very interesting, the lesson of the day. Now you think you know what's in the Master Course trilogy, and you find something you didn't remember was there, or you find something and it looks totally different. So that's what happened to me this morning. Messages to loved ones. This is burning prayers kind of messages. You may be wondering if you can send written prayers in Chief to loved ones who have passed on to the inner world. The answer is yes, you can. Your guardian Davis will hand the prayer to the loved ones, relatives, or close friends. They can be communicated with through such prayers. Souls who have attained mukti, freedom from rebirth, but who are not yet ready to enter into higher planes where they will no longer be involved with or communicate with those in earth consciousness because they have not yet finished helping their devotees to attain their highest potential in this lifetime, will also receive friendly messages from their loved ones on earth. Many chelas communicate with their departed gurus in this way. I didn't remember that that was there. Many chelas communicate with their departed guru in this way. Amazing. Took on new meaning to me this morning. So it's very interesting in a number of ways. One is, it explains how it looks from the guru's point of view. Because they have not yet finished helping their devotees to attain their highest potential in this lifetime. So it shows the obligation there. You know, it's like a parent to a child. You know, the child is 18 years old or something, and the parent is looking at it that he's training the child until age 21, so hasn't finished. There's a certain obligation there to finish. So whether you're in physical form or not, you maintain that obligation as a guru to your devotees to finish what you started, to help them spiritually unfold. The next point that stood out is highest potential in this lifetime. That's a very interesting phrase. You know, highest potential in this lifetime. It shows how the guru looks at you. What he's trying to do. He's trying to help you manifest your highest potential in this lifetime. In terms of spiritual unfoldment, of course, potential. not just do better or something, but to manifest your highest spiritual potential. That's quite a statement. He's looking for maximum attainment, trying to help you do that. So I thought that was useful too. An interesting question was raised in an email to me, and I'm still working on the answer. Thought I'd share it with you. It relates to this point. One of the Shishya wrote in and said, oh, thank you so much for what you're putting on Taka. It's really helpful, and I've been working with that for a long time and so forth. And, you know, do I have two gurus now? Are you my guru and Gurudeva also my guru? I was pondering that question. I've been pondering it for about a week and a half. How to answer? You know, it raises a very interesting perspective. So, I answered him partially, and I said, well, I'm thinking about it, but here's a partial answer for you. Many of the monks have, what's the other way? Yogaswami worked closely with Gurudeva ever since he initiated Gurudeva. Said the other way around. When Gurudeva received initiation from Yogaswami, Yogaswami started working very closely with him inwardly. So a number of the monks have had inner experiences of Yogaswami in one degree or another. So to them, the idea of having two gurus is not new, right? Because they experienced Yogaswami and they experienced Gurudeva. So it's not a new situation. Some of us have already encountered that idea of, gee, are there two gurus? Is Yogaswami my guru and Gurudeva my guru? Then you go back further, and someone who knew Yogaswami, in looking at Gurudeva, again faced that question, gee, you know, I guess there's two gurus. First I knew Yogaswami, and now I know Gurudeva. So it's an interesting question in that how far back does it go? You know, you go to Yogaswami, you go to Chalapaswami, you go to Kadaitswami. How many gurus really are there? You know? So it's not answerable to me at the moment. I'm just pondering it. Does it go all the way back to Shiva? We have a drawing like that in one of our books that has Shiva's Dakshinamurti sitting there and then the line of gurus coming out from him. So very interesting question. Sutra of the day, very insightful. It's about monastics. Their past is small, their future is large. That's the title of the sutra. And right there, you don't even need to read the sutra, really. It just can see where it's going. But we'll read it anyway. Siva's monastics will brave... I'm going to use a larger type next week. Siva's monastics walk bravely into the future, letting go of the past and letting what is be. Through yoga, their kundalini rises, expanding consciousness, changing values, and creating magical happenings around them. It's a very interesting phrase. Creating magical happenings around them. So, walking bravely into the future, letting go of the past. Is a way of manifesting your full spiritual potential, which is an idea up above. In other words, when a monk clings to his past, who he was, what he could have been, to some degree or another, he's perpetuating the karmas of that past rather than stepping into a new karmic cycle. So there's no reason, no value in being a monk and clinging to the past. It's like a contradiction. Because a monk is someone who has no past. He's let go of the past. He's given up the plans he may have had for some kind of worldly life, some kind of profession, accomplishing something in the world, totally let that go to become a monk. And in becoming a monk and letting go of that, a new pattern manifests, which causes more spiritual progress than the old pattern. So always keeping the past small is an important monastic discipline. And of course, that means not talking about it, not thinking about it, and so forth. We even have the tradition in our monastery that when parents come, they're our parents. They're parents to all the monks. They're not parents to one monk. So in that way, we kind of let the past go, keep it small as much as possible in that situation. Creating magical happenings around them. So, that's an interesting statement, and it shows a spiritual magnetism, I'd say, a spiritual force that reaches certain intensity. It's magnetic to wonderful things. If it's of a lesser intensity, it's not. When it reaches a certain, goes beyond a certain point, it influences the lives of people and attracts to it wonderful kinds of situations. So I think when we're getting a sense of that in the monastery, wonderful things have been happening. And this is a nice explanation for why. Which is that as long as the monastics keep the kundalini force high, then this occurs. It's that simple. So those are the thoughts for the day. No, there's one more. One more thought here. Excuse me. Okay. Duties of the disciple. This one struck me. Being with the Satguru is an intensification on the path of enlightenment. Always challenging, for growth is a challenge to the instinctive mind. If a guru does not provide this intensification, we could consider him to be more a philosophical teacher. So that's a nice point to remember, the idea of being challenged spiritually, and the idea is we don't want to settle down into a comfortable routine in our spiritual life, kind of just doing the same thing over and over again because it's comfortable, as Gurudeva says about certain religious groups. All they do is come together and sing and eat. You know, that's it. There's no real sadhana going on. Maybe gossip afterwards. So that's not a challenging, spiritually challenging situation. So challenging is always trying to improve. That's the essence of challenging. Always trying to improve oneself spiritually to one degree or another, never being content, never having the feeling, gee, I've arrived. I've matured enough spiritually for this life, I'll just coast from now on. Everything's comfortable, peaceful, just the way I like it. So, that's not the spirit of having a Satguru. The Satguru is there to keep you inspired to keep improving spiritually, keep moving forward. No matter where how far you've gone, you can still go further. Same idea as highest potential, just said another way to keep everyone moving forward. So that's an important attitude to always hold and never feel that, gee, I've arrived. This is all I need to attain in this life, but rather, gee, this is great, but let's even move further forward. At least a few times a month, someone emails in and says, what do I do? I'm just not doing that well on the spiritual path anymore. I'm having difficulty. What do you suggest? So there's two suggestions to get re-inspired, to get encouraged. The first one is perhaps we're reacting to some recent events. Sometimes we hit difficulties in our life or difficulties in the life of someone we love, and they really hit us emotionally. We get discouraged. We lose our inspiration. So, Gurudeva has given us a wonderful tool, the Vasana Daha Tantra, for just those occasions. So, how do we know if we're discouraged for that reason? Because we think about it. Our subconscious mind always tells us what the problems are by popping them up in front of us on a regular basis. So if we find ourselves constantly thinking about some recent events, means we haven't cleared the subconscious mind of their presence. So we need to take the time to do Vasana Daha Tantra. Write it all down, burn it up. Wait a while and see if we're still thinking about it. If we're not, good. But if we're thinking about it still, even though we've written it down, we have to write it down again. Part of it, we didn't write down and get rid of. Probably got rid of a third of it or half of it. But part of it's still there. So we can go through this process a number of times. And when we reach the point where we don't think about it anymore, we know we don't have to write it down anymore. Subconscious mind stops popping it up as something to deal with. Another aspect of difficult times, going through hardship, is we blame it on someone else. They did that to me, and we're clinging to that. We're resenting what this other person did to me. Boy, we think about it all the time. This person did that. How could they do that to me? So we've forgotten one of the basic principles of the law of karma is to take responsibility for what happens. Our karma comes to us through other people, and sometimes we naturally blame the other people. It's easier than blaming ourselves, right? They're the first scapegoat. They did that to me. I'm going to resent that. I'm going to feel hurt because they did that to me. I'm going to become discouraged because they did that to me and I didn't deserve it. So, obviously, we're stuck until we accept responsibility. I did that to me through this person. Because it's hard for things just to fall out of trees and, you know, nature. Your karma rarely comes back to you in that way. It comes back to you through other people. So, I did that to me through that person. Taking responsibility. Whatever happens, I did that to me. through the other person. So when we stop looking at the person as the cause and look at ourselves as the cause, then we can start moving on from this difficult experience. But if we don't, then we're stuck because we resent them. We dislike them. We've become discouraged because life is unfair to us. So we have to shift our perspective into the perspective that whatever happens, there's only one person to blame. Whoever does it doesn't really matter. Something good happens, if something bad happens, there's only one person to blame, and of course, that's me. I did it to myself. So those are some thoughts on moving on from recent difficult times, how we can get out of that discouragement. But even then, when we've cleared that from our subconscious mind, we still may be not inspired. We're improving, but we're not back to where we were. It's like an airplane that landed. And we were doing fine. We're up in the sky going along, and all of a sudden, life brought us back to the ground. We landed. So we're on the ground again. Well, how do we take off? How do we get back up to where we were in consciousness when we land through discouragement? Well, an easy way is through the temple worship, through the Shakti of the deity. And in our tradition, Lord Muruga is particularly effective for lifting us up, energizing us, getting our plane to take off again. It's a very uplifting Shakti, particularly on festival days, and particularly if we engage in some kind of vrata or penance to really focus in on the Shakti. So there's lots of opportunities throughout the year at Muruga festivals or Shashti days to when Muruga's Shakti is stronger than usual. And if we are in need of it, then we should do some serious preparation. Do a vrata, fasting during the day, do some penance. Really focus in and try to absorb as much of Muruga's Shakti as possible during those auspicious days. And if we do a good enough job, we'll be inspired. We'll be back in the air. We will have taken off again in consciousness in a very, very simple way. How can we prevent this from happening in the first place? When emails come in from someone who's in this state of mind that says, gee, you know, I'm not doing my sadhana, I've kind of lost my inspiration, spiritual life isn't working out very well, what do you suggest? Sangha. Not a river, a fellowship, sangha, a fellowship, companionship, spiritual companions. Quite often, someone falls off the path because they don't have any friends who are on the path. They're the only one. So they're influenced by the people they work with, influenced by the people they go to school with, who aren't interested in spiritual things, and before you know it, they've lost their interest in spiritual things too. They're interested in just what everyone else is interested in that they socialize with at work and at school. There's some beautiful quotes in the Chorale on this. As water changes according to the soil through which it flows, so a man assimilates the character of his associates. Purity of mind and purity of conduct. These two depend upon the purity of a man's companions. Tirukkural certainly understands this one very, very well. It's got a lot of good advice there on companions. And a good way of thinking about companions is the natural concern that parents have for who their children are making friends with. Because we know what happens. The children start acting like their friends, right? Happens all the time. So it's a simple example of this principle. So, if we want to reinforce our spiritual aspirations, we need to have friends who are also spiritual. It's very hard if we don't. So the advice I always give when someone emails in is to, you know, find some kind of religious gathering you can go to once a week. Find a sangham that you can affiliate with, people who are spiritually inclined that you can make friends with, and you'll find your spiritual life getting strengthened just by that fellowship. So that's the idea of satsanga, fellowship of those who are seeking truth, seeking spiritual unfoldment. The second advice given in this case is, how's your daily sadhana going? And of course they'll say, oh, what sadhana? Let's see, I haven't done it for so long, I forget what I'm supposed to do. Because if you end up in this state of mind, it means somewhere along the line you slacked off on your sadhana, and then you probably stopped it altogether, at least parts of it. So this is the second way of preventing getting discouraged in the first place. The first way is fellowship with spiritual seekers. The second way is to keep your daily sadhana going with diligence. Don't give up on it. Sometimes Gurudeva has initiated church members in mantra diksha, and they do their mantra diksha for a year or two and stop. Just stop doing it altogether. So you can't benefit spiritually from a diksha you received years ago if you don't do the sadhana that the diksha requires. Diksha wanes in power. The power of the diksha is sustained and increased by doing the sadhana that came with it. So japa, vishesha diksha, puja. Sometimes members stop during their puja. Just don't have enough time, right? Oh, I'm so busy, there's no way I can do the puja. It's just, you know, I go to bed, I get up, I go to work. There's no time in my life for puja. Why did you get initiated? Why did you take on the obligation of doing puja if you're not going to do it? So, doing the daily puja for those who receive vishesha diksha, of course, is necessary part of the daily sadhana to sustain the spiritual unfoldment, to sustain the state of inspiration that you have. So, sounds simple, fellowship, sangha, sangha and sadhana, but it works. You know, if we're diligent in maintaining sangha, friends, companions who are spiritually inclined, and doing our daily sadhana, we don't end up in states of discouragement that we otherwise would. We don't end up back into the worldly habits that we previously had. We stay above them. We go a different direction. But without both of those, then it's likely we'll end up back where we were. We'll feel like, gee, we've regressed here. We're not making progress. We were doing better, and now we're not. It's like a weight loss program. You know, when you do real well for a while, then all of a sudden you start putting it back on. So same way with sadhana.